The meeting of the Rules Committee will come to order. A quorum is present, and I'm looking for a motion on approval of the minutes.
So moved.
Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes of January 14th, 2019. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
And opposed, say no. The motion prevails. The minutes are approved. The next item of business is preliminary committee budgets. Okay. We have Barb Julek, House Controller, will come forward and present on the proposed committee budgets.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barb Julek, House Controller. In your packet are two pieces of paper, one 2019 R10 resolution, followed behind by a proposed House Committee and Minority Caucus budget for calendar year 20 and 21. Legislative session, which is a two-year session, committee budgets are set by the Rules Committee. This proposal would set a two-year budget for the committees and minority caucus for a total of $251,500 as divided out between the various committees as shown on the sheet of paper. And I can stand for questions if there are any.
Any discussion by members? Seeing none, I guess we would look for a motion to approve the, it's the R10 resolution.
So moved.
Discussion of the motion. Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, say no. Motion prevails and R10 is adopted. The next item of business is the adoption of recount resolutions. And Ms. Julek, why don't you stay in case there's any questions. And members, we have two mandatory recount fee reimbursements before us. The resolutions are the R9 2019 Bliss and the 2019 Purcell. And just by way of context, the House has a longstanding policy of paying for recount expenses and legal fees for caucuses and mandatory recount situations, and that's what these resolutions would accomplish. So I would look for a motion on the two resolutions, and we can have a discussion, if any, on the motion.
I would move, Mr. Chairman, those two, and additionally the 2019-BOW, which would pay the legal fees for Representative Bow in the amount of $2,600. That is in consistent with our legal fee policy. He was not the one that requested that recount. It was outside of the mandatory recount. He did not request that. The history of this body has been that when a member needs to respond to a recount that has been requested by another member who voluntarily wanted to pay for their share of it, that we pay for the other side of it, the one who has to respond. So that's been the history. It is in our legal policy. So I would move the two that you mentioned and the additional one.
So the motion from Representative Dowd is to approve 2019 Bliss, 2019 Purcell, and I'm not sure that the other is in our packet. Based on our discussion yesterday, Representative Dowd, we moved both of the recount reimbursements that were for the discretionary recount from the agenda. Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I thought that our discussion was that you were not going to change the policy of the House, and the policy of the House is that the one who did not request it, that had to respond to the person who requested it, who voluntarily wanted to pay for their own, the person who had to respond to that, the House has in history paid for those, and it is in our legal policy that we do pay for those. So that's why I'm adding that one in. And I can, I'm sure my staff probably has copies of that one if you don't have them.
Representative Carlson.
Karen, have we received a formal billing? That has happened. Okay. That would be crucial in terms of how we would move forward, I would think.
Right. And Representative Dowd, there are a number of updates required under the legal policy of the House based on changes in statutory law. So at some point, we would need to adopt changes to the legal policy to reflect current law. And that, for that reason, I would ask that we table for now the question of the discretionary one with the commitment from me that we will revisit it when we have determined whether that's the correct approach. Based on what you said yesterday, we are not prepared to move forward on that one today. Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The legal fee policy of the House is that we do cover these. Can you bring up in some change in statute where you think that makes this null and void, or that we should somehow change this? Or are you proposing to change the legal fee policy that we don't pay for that? It shouldn't matter what party someone's from. Our legal fee policy doesn't recognize that. It just says that if somebody outside of the mandatory recount where it's done automatically, where we do pay those, if somebody outside of that requests it and wants to pay for it, and I think that's appropriate that that happens, that the person who has to respond to that, we do cover theirs because they didn't request it. They didn't, and it's not really their problem. It's the other side. Frankly, the candidate that requested it should pay both sides, but our policy is that we pay for the side that didn't request it. So is there something in statute that you think conflicts with this?
Representative Dowd, the difference is how discretionary mandatory recounts are defined. The materials that you're proposing that we take up are not in the proposal. And so absent, if you're willing to withdraw your motion, I will just lay this whole issue over and we will come back to it. I was under a different understanding of how we were approaching this today. And so if you want a vote on the motion, we can have it. I will oppose it. And we will revisit this issue in totality.
Yeah, I'm fine if you want to move forward with the two, you know, I guess I'd want a commitment at the next Rules Committee that we revisit the other one. Our policy is very clear. It is our House policy. There is instances of this in the past where we have done this. I don't think it's Representative Bowe's fault that the person who, you know, brought this recount forward and volunteered to pay for theirs and pay for the recount, that Representative Bowe, who had to hire counsel to represent him, should have to pay for that. Frankly, the candidate that brought it should have to pay for it, but that's not our policy. Our policy is that we would pay for it, and I think that's fair, consistent with our past history and consistent with our policy. So I guess I just want your commitment. If that is your commitment, then I would move just the first two, and I'd withdraw the 2019-Bowe.
Representative Dowd, that was the commitment I offered, and I will renew it. We will come back to this question. And, of course, I understand the merits of what you're talking about. If you're subject to the recount and you didn't choose it and it's discretionary, on the other hand, we are talking about taxpayers refunding political campaigns for an election contest. So there is, you know, broader consideration here. And so I commit to you we will revisit the discretionary if we can adopt the mandatory recount provisions today.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dowd.
Would that be at the next Rules Committee meeting? Revisit this?
Yes, Representative Dowd.
Okay, then that is my motion.
So members, to be clear, the motion in front of us is to approve the 2019 Bliss Resolution and the 2019 Purcell Resolution. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The motion prevails and the 2019 Bliss Resolution and the 2019 Purcell Resolutions are adopted. The next item on the agenda is discussion of permanent rules of the House. We are going to start with a presentation from nonpartisan staff on the division structure currently in place under the temporary rules. A number of members of the public have signed up to testify. We will make sure that we get their testimony in first. I will check to see if any others in the audience wish to testify who are not on our list, and we will make sure to reserve time for members to weigh in. And so, I think the more orderly way to do this is to let Mr. Marks complete his testimony. We can have any questions from members to Mr. Marks specific on his work, and then we will go to the public. So please identify yourself for the record, Mr. Marks, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill Marks, Chief Fiscal Analyst for the House. And in your packets, there are several materials that go along with there that I want to use as part of the presentation. Starting out is the January 23rd memo from Representative Lynn Carlson, Chair of the Ways and Means Committee. That's in the subject is Ways and Means Bill Referral Process. There is also then following that a January 22nd memo, which is one of those referral memos that I'll get to. And perhaps starting with the first item, the January 23rd memo, this outlines the process used for referring bills within the Ways and Means Committee. The third paragraph down there, the referral process, and then the first bullet is, after each round of bill introductions, if bills are referred to the Ways and Means Committee and should be referred to one of the finance divisions, a referral memo will be prepared. That memo will notify fiscal chairs and committee staff, chief authors, Ways and Means, various people, of where the bill referrals are going. And that a sample of that is that second memo, that January 22nd Lynn Carlson memo, which if you look at that, just it lists the first item on there, bills. These bills are referred to the Agriculture and Food Finance Policy and Finance Division, or Finance and Policy Division. The two bills listed, House Files 2221 and 232. Then it points out there are no bills being referred to the Capital Investment Division in this particular day. Then it continues with the Education Finance Division, one bill, and then the Energy and Climate Division, no bills, and so on. Listing all the divisions of it, of the Ways and Means Committee, and which bills may have been referred to those divisions, or if that division had no bills. As I understand it, the process is going to be after each day when there are bill introductions to Ways and Means, a memo like this will be issued indicating which bills are referred to whichever divisions of the Ways and Means Committee. That memo is being posted on the Ways and Means Committee website and is also, it's available on the Ways and Means Committee website. It's also being emailed to the members that are listed here, the members of Ways and Means, chief authors, and so on. The memo, that particular memo is also going to be included in the next agenda, or the next Ways and Means Committee meeting agenda, and will be included in the minutes of that particular Ways and Means Committee. Then the other point is that, and you have a sample in your folders for of the bill tracking system for House File 76, and that might be a couple pages back, but that particular page shows how the House bill tracking system is tracking these bill referrals. And if you notice House File, and I happen to pick House File 76 because it's a bill that's referred to the Ways and Means Committee, referred to a finance division, and actually referred to a division of that finance division. And if you notice on House File 76, then the tracking on January 14th, it was introduced in the first reading and was referred to the Ways and Means Committee. Then also January 14th, referred by the chair of the Ways and Means Committee to the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division. And then on January 16th, it was referred by the chair of the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division to the Water Division of that division. So the bill tracking system itself now is showing these referrals within the Ways and Means Committee so that where the bill is will be within that information will be on the bill tracking system, the House bill tracking system. So then on the second page of the January 23rd Representative Carlson memo mentions at the top a division engrossments. After a division takes action on the bill, that committee action, the division engrossment, will be posted on the division's website. So if House File 76 had moved, which it hasn't yet, but if it had moved in either the Water Division or the Environment and Natural Resources Finance Division, that action would be posted on the website of those particular divisions. And then the division report would be posted there. The division engrossment will be posted on the website of the Ways and Means Committee when it moves back there. That information is all going to be posted on either the division's website, the division taking the action, or the Ways and Means Committee website when the bill is referred by or received by the Ways and Means Committee. If that bill happened to be referred to another division within Ways and Means, that would also show up in the bill tracking system and then would be tracked on the action taken by those divisions would be tracked on those particular websites. Also in your folders is a diagram. The top of the page says Ways and Means Process. And this is just an attempt to outline how the divisions of the Ways and Means Committee are involved in hearing bills. The figure one part of it, the left-hand side of the page, would show for policy bills. A policy-only bill can be referred to a division of the Ways and Means Committee if it's a, for example, the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division. If the Speaker determines this is a higher education policy issue, not a finance issue, it can be referred directly from the floor to the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division. Then as you follow the arrows on here, if that division, if the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division takes action on that bill, that division must refer the bill back to the floor for re-referral. That division does not refer it to the Ways and Means Committee in the case of where the bill was referred from the floor. It refers it back to the floor. It could be for referral to another committee. It could be for referral to the General Register. If you had a situation where a policy bill was referred to the policy and the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division, and that division added an amendment that put a fiscal obligation with the bill, even then the Higher Ed Policy and Finance Division cannot refer the bill to Ways directly to Ways and Means. It needs to go back to the floor because it came from the floor, and then with a recommendation it be re-referred to Ways and Means. So the underlying principle here is the bill has to come out of the division the same way it went into the division. If it came from the floor to the division, it needs to go back to the floor for re-referral. On the right-hand side of the page, figure two is the diagram for bills that are referred to the Ways and Means Committee. If a bill is referred to the Ways and Means Committee by the Speaker, then it can be referred by memo by the chair of the Ways and Means Committee to the appropriate finance division. It comes after voted out of the appropriate finance division. It goes back to Ways and Means. It could then be acted on by Ways and Means or could be re-referred by memo to another finance division within the Ways and Means Committee and coming out. And then, as you can see, when it comes out of Ways and Means, it goes back to the floor for referral to the General Register or possibly to a subsequent committee if that is necessary. So that the chart is attempting to show where bills need to move. The underlying principle is a bill comes out of a committee the same way it came in. If it came in by referral from the floor by the Speaker, it needs to go back to the floor for re-referral. If a bill is in a Policy and Finance Division of Ways and Means by virtue of being referred there by the Ways and Means Chair, it needs to go back to the Ways and Means Committee. It cannot go directly to the floor. A bill needs to come out of a division the same way it came in, either to the floor if referred by the Speaker or to the Ways and Means Committee if referred by the Ways and Means Chair. The other document that's in your folder is a document prepared by the Chief Clerk's Office. It says House Committee Structure on it. I don't plan to review that. I thought it might be helpful as far as laying out the committee structure itself and where the committees and the divisions. But it's simply illustrating the committee structure in the House at this point. Mr. Chair, that's my presentation. I'm happy to take questions.
Representative New, you had a question for Mr. Marks?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, after that explanation, I have to assume that all of our visitors in the room are crystal clear on the new policy and the transparency. And a quick question. You, Mr. Marks, you used the word can, that a policy bill can be referred directly to a policy committee. Is there discretion in that? Must it be referred directly to a policy committee, or might that also go through this rather convoluted Ways and Means process?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative New, the discretion is with the Speaker in making the referrals, and I think that's I can't answer your question as far as how the Speaker is going to do those.
Sure.
I think in most cases policy bills are probably going would go directly to the division, but there may be reasons that it doesn't. And I can't answer that part.
Representative New.
Okay, so just to be clear then, if for some reason the majority wanted to move a bill more quickly through the committee process, they could send that bill to Ways and Means rather than directly to a policy committee, so that bill could also avoid going back and forth to the floor, back to other policy committees. That bill could go directly to Ways and Means, even though it has no financial aspect to the bill. It could still be sent to Ways and Means, where it can go through this process of referral by memo and move quickly through that process with a lack of transparency.
Representative New, is that a question for Mr. Marks or
a... just a follow-up comment?
Okay, Representative Dowd.
Thank you. I want to refer to the Ways and Means process. It's a flowchart that was handed out. It says at the bottom it was prepared by Minnesota House Research. My question is for Mr. McCormick. On the right-hand side, under Figure 2, finance bills, at the bottom, it says that bills can go from Ways and Means by memo to the appropriate finance division, and then again to the subsequent finance division. But it very clearly says on this that they can only return to Ways and Means through a vote. It's not my understanding in the rules, and if I'm wrong, I guess you can point to that in the temporary rules where only a vote would get them back to Ways and Means. It's my understanding that a memo would also do that, and if I'm wrong, I'd love to be corrected on that. If I am correct that it can be done by vote or memo, can we get an updated copy of this that correctly reflects the new transparency process?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, the Rule 6.05 allows a bill to move between divisions, and it gives the committee chair, Representative Carlson, the power of recalling the bill. So you're right. We should change from vote to vote or recall. And I will do a new version and provide it to the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Dowd.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. McCormick. I appreciate that. That was my understanding. That is also my concern with this process, members. It's and it's also maybe I'll do a follow-up question for Mr. McCormick. Could a bill be, if you'll allow, Mr. Chairman?
You have the
could
floor,
a bill, Mr. McCormick,
Dowd.
Could a bill be moved from committee if it's been tabled? Is there anything in the rules preventing a tabled bill? If a committee has taken an action to table a bill, is there anything in our rules to prevent that bill from being taken from that committee by memo by the Ways and Means Chair back to Ways and Means?
Mr. McCormick.
Madam Chair, members, no. The interaction between tabling a bill and the right of the Ways and Means Chairman to recall a bill is not something that we have custom and usage on. Therefore, I think that we'd find out. But I think the power to recall is absolute and isn't conditional on Rule 6.05.
Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, I know sometimes I get to be really partisan, but having been Speaker for the last 4 years, and it's maybe something you don't understand until you've had that job, but you tend to care a lot about this institution. You know, I don't serve on any committees except for this one. For the last 4 years, I didn't serve on any committees. But if I served on committees, I guess I'd want to know that my vote counted for something. I'd want to know that if I was voting to table a bill because my committee didn't want to give it up because there was more work to do or we were concerned about something in that bill, that one person by memo couldn't grab that bill and take it away and put it somewhere else. And technically, there's been a hearing on the bill, right? So we've checked all the boxes. This is the concern. And it doesn't matter what party you're from. You sit on these committees. Every one of us makes a sacrifice to serve in this chamber, to serve in the legislature. I'm sure all of us could make more money out in the world doing other things. But we have decided, because we want to be good public servants, to take time out of our lives and sacrifice from our families to be here. It should actually mean something when you're here. You should actually get a say on what happens here. I have a big problem with moving a bill by memo, you know, not to mention the lack of transparency in all this. You know, it used to be that when a bill left a committee, there was a motion attached to it that told the public who was there to testify on that bill where that bill was headed to next, so they could follow the process. I got a map for you if you want to follow the process now. Good luck to you, though. This isn't, I mean, we might be able to figure it out, but we've got real experts here that will help us and tell us where these bills are headed. With less notice than we had before, but we're here every day. So for us, we'll be able to figure this out. The public will not. And I know you're going to make all kinds of promises to say that, you know, we won't do that and we'll take every effort. And I trust that you will. But it's trust, but verify. That's why we have rules in the House of Representatives. We have rules to protect the public and the process so that the public can actually participate in the process. And you know, all but four of the last 100 and whatever years, we've used a process where bills bounce off the floor and members actually have a say on does an amendment get added to a bill and where does that bill go next? And a member in a committee that says and convinces enough of the other members of that committee that there's work that needs to be done on this bill and I want this bill tabled. Because that's your right as a member of a committee. You get to try to convince the rest of that committee that, hey, there's a problem here. And we've all seen it. Mary Liz Holberg was my favorite. She could kill a bill dead on the House floor that was destined to pass. You know why? People respected her. And she'd do it on the other side of the aisle just as well. She didn't play partisan politics. She cared about the policy. And she was so well respected when she stood up on the House floor and said, members, you're about to make a huge mistake. There's a fatal flaw in this bill, and this is what it is. And I can't tell you the number of bills I saw get re-referred back to committee to get fixed because Mary Liz Holberg was smart enough to catch something and well-respected enough that members on both sides of the aisle would say, you know what, we agree. And that's legislating. That's legislating. And the public has every right to come in and sit at that testifying table and have input on these bills. If they know when that happens. And if you come today, if the bill's up in committee today, used to be that the motion would be when that bill left this committee and you would hear it, that the bill was headed to another committee. So you could watch the agenda of that committee. Now that's not going to happen. You know, and now we're going to have policy bills, and I've already seen policy bills getting referred to the Ways and Means Committee. I can only assume that's because you don't want to follow the regular process of having bills get referred from one committee to the next so the public knows and have those bounce off the floor so members get input on amendments and whether that bill should go to that committee or not or whether it should move forward or not move forward. We've all seen them die on the House floor as well. This is, you know, Mr. Chairman, this isn't political. This is literally about this institution and doing what's right, not only for this institution, but for the public. This is a mistake. It shouldn't be done. Fair warning. Please, we'll work with you to find something that'll work if you want to. You have my commitment on that. But this is destined to fail, and it's destined to set you up for a public that's going to be mad at you because they can't follow the process. So please, and I, Mr. Chairman, I want to tell you that I have a lot of respect for you because what you did today is you brought this stuff in front of us and said, we're not going to vote on it today. We're not even going to offer amendments. We're just going to talk about it. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to do this. And thanks for giving the public the opportunity to come in to do that. I think that was a classy move. But please take the advice. We've got time to change this and fix this. And, you know, we don't have to move bills this way. So I would just strongly encourage all of us on both sides of the aisle who care about this institution and really care about the work that you do on committees. Doesn't matter to me. I don't sit on any committees, right? I'm not going to see any bills in committees. I think I'm lucky. But you all do a lot of work, and I really respect that, and I appreciate the work that you do on those committees. But I also want it to mean something. I want you to be the next Mary Liz Holberg, and I want you to be that well-respected. But this process doesn't give you that opportunity. Because you can convince your committee members that there's a fatal flaw with a bill, lay it over, and it can get plucked from committee by one person and sent to the next committee. And we've checked a box that it had a hearing in that committee, so we've met the requirement, and I can hear the questions on the floor. This didn't get a hearing in that committee. Oh, yeah, it did. But it didn't get a vote. We don't even require a vote on a bill in committee. Really? Why do we have committees? You all are going to be awfully jealous of me that I don't sit on any committees because I'm not wasting my time. You know, why do we have committees if we're not going to vote on bills?
These are questions everybody should be thinking about. This isn't a partisan thing. Anyway, sorry, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate letting me. I am very passionate about this because I care about this institution. And I think this is a mistake. And I hope that, you and I will be very respectfully to work with you in the future to fix this. But I really hope that, we can. And this shouldn't move forward the way it is.
So next on the list, I have Representative Drazkowski, O'Neill, and I think I saw Pinto. Members, just to be clear, what I said at the beginning is that I'd like to confine this portion to questions to Mr. Marks, and then make sure we have ample time for public testimony, and then we will return to member commentary. So, Representative Dowd, I didn't cut you off.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But representatives who are on my list, Representative Dowd, please try to confine your questions to questions for Mr. Marks, and we will come back to members' opportunities to speak.
This is a process question, if you would allow me really quickly.
Representative Dowd.
We are debating the rules and the temporary rules. In our packets, I know everybody's new and we've switched majorities and we've got new people. We did not get copies of the rules or the amendment in our packets. Everything else was very well prepared. Thank you for that. But it's tough to debate something without having actually a copy of the rules and a copy of the temporary rules in front of us. I've sent our staff to get them for us. I see that your members on your side of the aisle have them. Maybe you brought them. I don't know.
Representative Beckerfin, you have to wait for recognition.
So anyways, Mr. Chairman, if we could get copies or somehow figure that out, I think it's very appropriate to have them.
Representative Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just for the record, it wasn't that our members got them and other members did not. I literally was just handed this because I requested the rules from a page 30 seconds ago. So
Representative Drazkowski, we will work with the page and our committee staff to facilitate anything you need in terms of more information. So, Representative Drazkowski, do you have a question for Mr. Marks?
I do, and a thank you for you, Mr. Chair, for focusing on the people who want to testify today. And I hope we can delay a lot of it because we're going to discuss this later, and we really need to. And Mr. Marks, I hope, Mr. Chair, we can expedite our way through here and get to the people who want to talk. Mr. Marks, I'm wondering if there's a way to put this January 23rd memo, which this is the first time I've seen this memo, and I understand now in reading the memo that the engrossments are going to be initiated by the Ways and Means Committee, which I heard from a citizen this morning described as the hide-and-seek committee, and I hadn't heard that before. But, Mr. Marks, is there a way for this January 23rd memo to be put together in a visual form?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Drazkowski, we can try. I think I know what you're asking for. We can work on that.
Okay, thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Chair. I hope that we can.
We'll return to conversation later, Representative Drazkowski.
I hope we can better understand it. Thank you.
Right. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, can you help me just understand the engrossing process? I had been staff over in the Senate quite a while ago, and it was something else sometimes to get the latest engrossment. And I can't tell you how many times I went down to the engrossing office myself personally to get the latest engrossment as it was hot off the presses. Help me understand the engrossing process. Help me understand just a little bit more about if the committee's not voting, how do we adopt amendments? Or are we voting and are we adopting amendments in that process? I feel like the whole process is sort of upended. I don't even know how to function right now and I'm in my fourth term. Please help me understand this.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, the engrossment is basically incorporating the amendments that have been adopted in the committee. I think the assumption is committees are voting and committees are making decisions. I think the idea of recalling a bill from a committee is probably a fairly rare event. The same process exists in the rules for example, the House as a body can recall a committee or a bill from committee. The issue of when amendments don't get attached would be if a committee has voted on amendments and the amendments are adopted in the committee, but the committee hasn't passed out the bill. That could happen if the chair recalled the bill. That also happens currently if the House recalls a bill from the committee, and this is a rare event, but if the House recalls a bill from a committee, the amendments aren't attached when that occurs either. So the engrossing occurs at the point that the committee moves the bill out with the, you know, the committee is moving the, there's a motion to re-refer the bill to the House with a recommendation to go on the general register, or there is a motion to re-refer the bill to the Ways and Means Committee, and that motion is adopted in the committee or division, then a division or committee report is created. The difference between the committee or a division report and the engrossment is that the committee report is that document that says Pinto for the Early Childhood Division reports back to the Education Committee that House File 1234 be referred to the committee with the following amendments. And it could be a delete everything amendment. It could be a page and line amendment. That's the division report, just like committee reports that you see on the floor might be structured like that. A division engrossment, then, or a committee engrossment, is the new bill. It's the document with all those amendments incorporated. And the process as outlined here would allow for both of those to be made available on the website. The division engrossment would be on the division page, the division page on the House website. The engrossment would show up on the Ways and Means page if Ways and Means is the parent committee in this case.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So right now, well, okay, so the previous biennium, we'll say the way we had been doing that, I could go to the bill, you know, and it would bring up the latest engrossments. Is that still the case? And you can answer that, and I have another quick follow-up so that I'm not taking up too much time. But I have a bill coming up next week, and it's a very big bill. It's a very important bill. It's a bill to protect children from violence and it's not completely ready, but we're going to be talking about it in committee. So we'll be working as a committee. We'll be doing some amendments, and because it probably only has one committee stop, there's a potential that the committee could decide that we should lay it on the table as we work on it, work on the final amendments, and then bring it back. So my question is, if we pass these amendments, but we lay it on the table to work on it some more so that we can do yet more amendments in the one committee that it has, will it get engrossed or not?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, and on your first question, not on your bill, but the first question, I should have added the division engrossments will also appear on the House website under the bill.
Okay.
I should have added that in my previous comments. So, yes, they will be available if you look up the bill there. On the second example of your particular bill, typically bills are not engrossed until they pass out of the division or the committee or whatever the situation is. There are cases where unofficial engrossments can be done if it's necessary within the committee, if the committee does extensive amending and then wants to go back and look at the bill again. That's a process that's done within the committee or division, and you'd have to work with the committee chair on that. It can be done. It's unofficial. It doesn't show up in the system typically, although the committee or division could put it on their website. But you would need to work with House Research on that particular one, because that process is typically done in House Research, not the revisor's office.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. And so that process would essentially remain the same. So I guess my concern then, and help me understand this part. So my concern would be, the committee does all this work, we adopt amendments, we can do kind of a temporary engrossment or what you just said. Then my concern is, if it was laid on the table, the Ways and Means chair could recall it somewhere else while we're still working on it. Do I understand that correctly, that it could be taken out of that committee by the Ways and Means memo or chair's memo while we're still working on the bill? Is that correct?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative O'Neill, the authority to recall doesn't specify or put any particular criteria on it. It could happen. I would think that's not going to happen, but it could happen.
Yeah. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, I know we want to get to testifiers. Mr. Marks, can you just provide some historical context real briefly, clarify or confirm? My understanding is that this is the same process that was used pretty recently for a full 4 years, so we could sort of look back and see if there were concerns or problems then. But is this pretty much similar to what was used previously, or can you just give that context for us?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, this is similar to the process that was used in 2007 through 2010. It's also similar to the process that the Senate used in 2000, within its Finance Committee when it had divisions within that committee in 2000, I'm thinking year 13 through 16, and it's similar, but probably with a lot less transparency than the process that the House used many years ago when there was an Appropriations Committee with divisions within it.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chair, one other question for Mr. Marks. So when I'm looking at the page for House File 76, in terms of showing where a bill is, what the latest version of the bill, to Representative Neal's questions, it seems like that information is all the same as it's been in the past several years. It might be the language is a little bit different. Is it referred by memo versus whatever else? But as far as if anybody wants to know, member of the public, us, anybody else, where a bill is, when the hearing is, what the latest version of the bill is, it seems like that information is all the same. In terms of the availability on the website, et cetera. But am I reading that correctly?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pinto, yes. I mean, this is the same kind of information that has, or perhaps more information than was provided in the past on the website.
Okay. More information. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all done.
Representative Becker-Finn, did you seek recognition, or did we cover it before? I don't know what that meant. Representative Trevor Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I had other questions.
Okay, go ahead.
So, Mr. Marks, prior to January 3rd, 2017, I was also a member of the public trying to follow what was going on in these buildings. And so I'm also looking at the page that starts with House File 76. So if you were signed up, you had added House File 76 to your My Bills and were using that feature to be updated and notified when anything happened with a bill you were interested in. Would you get the same number of notifications now under the new rules that are being proposed, or how is that different, or is it different?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn, I don't use the My Bills. I'm afraid I can't answer that question. I think you would get that information, but I can't answer that.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe some other staff person can get back to us on that. Because I think that's, you know, the public is generally using the website to look up a bill that they're interested in, and it sounds like you would still have the list. My understanding of the way My Bills works is anything that would show up on the list here, when it's added to the list there, you get kind of dinged in your inbox that change was made.
Mr. Chair and Representative Becker-Finn, I believe that's the case, but as I said, I don't know.
Representative Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then kind of a separate issue, you know, we're talking about the old rules as if everything was great under the old rules. But, I mean, as an example, you know, there's this, oh, my gosh, we might not be able to vote on things in committee. As an example, in the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee for the last 2 years, I think we laid over the vast majority of the bills that we heard. We never voted on them. They were laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. I think in theory, the way that's supposed to work is that the chair would lay things over, and then when the omnibus bill comes back, some of those things that were laid over then, you know, part of that omnibus bill. But in reality, what happened is when we heard the omnibus bill in committee, and I don't have the spreadsheet right in front of me, but there were 13 to 15 provisions that we'd never heard in committee that suddenly appeared in an omnibus bill that had not had previous, you know, people's chance to testify on. And as we all know and have learned, especially in the last couple of years, when you have an omnibus bill that's many hundreds of pages long, there is a lack of transparency because folks don't have time to sift through and if they're following that one thing. And so, you know, it really isn't that different as far as being a member of a committee and maybe Representative Dowd, you know, if you haven't been in committees for several years, you know, that's, and so the public's aware of this being laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, especially if you're in the minority, is speak for your bill is dead many times. So, and that's not going to be covered anywhere on the website, on the revisor of statutes website. So just want to point out, it's not like the old system was perfect and there was great transparency and the ability of members to move things forward if the chair didn't wish to. So thank you.
Representative Albright, you had a question for Mr. Marks. And just a reminder, we had one on the one side, one on the other. We'll try to confine speeches to after public testimony.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I will be very diligent about asking just the question. Mr. Marks, I'm going to refer with this first question to the Ways and Means process. And as I heard you say, on policy bills, it is the Speaker's discretion to refer them. And under the finance bills, it is the Ways and Means Chair's discretion in terms of how to refer. Do I understand that correctly?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, maybe I could refine that a little. It is the Speaker's discretion to refer the bill, the first referral on the bill, whether it's policy bill, finance bill, whatever bill, to the first referral is the Speaker's discretion. Those bills the Speaker refers to the Ways and Means Committee, then it becomes the Ways and Means Chair's discretion within the Ways and Means Committee which division to refer it to.
Representative Albright.
And Mr. Marks, thank you. So maybe a little further clarification for the benefit of understanding by the public, then, what discretion or why would there be a differentiation between the Speaker determining that a bill go to a policy committee or go to Ways and Means? Is it based upon the subject matter? Is it based upon the timing of when they need to get the bill through committee? Is it a speed issue, or if it help me understand why there is discretion for the Speaker to take it straight to Ways and Means or straight to a committee, which we have seen in the bills announced on the floor.
Mr. Marks,
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I think it's the I think the thought is here that if it because there are a number of combined policy and finance divisions, if it is just a policy issue, if there is not a fiscal implication, it doesn't need to go through Ways and Means. So it could go directly to the Higher Education Policy and Finance Division. And then they would send it back out to that committee, because if it acts on it, would send it back directly to the floor. It would never go to Ways and Means. If it has a fiscal implication, then it would go to Ways and Means, because it needs to come through Ways, it would come back through Ways and Means under Rule 4.10. And so I think that's the kind of the judgment call along the way. Is this something that ultimately needs to go to Ways and Means? If it does not need to go to Ways and Means, then refer it directly to the Policy and Finance Division, and it can come directly out without a stop in Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Albright.
Thank you. Let me switch gears a little bit here and just talk about deadlines that loom, you know, further on in session. And I'm just wondering, when would deadlines be met? Would it be a deadline being fulfilled when it is referred to and heard in Ways and Means, or as it would be referred by memo from Ways and Means to a committee, and quite possibly not any action taken, but it's like a touch and go when you're in an airplane? And it comes back to Ways and Means. So help me understand how any changes might occur to the first and second deadline process as we move further into session.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, I think as regarding the first and second deadline, it will bills that are in a policy committee need to meet the first or second deadline. Bills that are within Ways and Means, I think that's going to depend on how the deadline language is written, and deadline language has been written in different ways in different years. Sometimes the deadlines apply to the omnibus bills. Sometimes they apply to the committees taking action on the bills. And that distinction, I don't know where what the deadlines are going to say, so that becomes part of the question there. Part of the reason I can't definitively answer the question is how the deadlines get written. But the first and second deadlines typically apply to the policy committees, The third deadline, which becomes one for either for finance committees or divisions taking action or for finance bills being moved out of committees.
And just for point of clarification, it is the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader who together define what the, how the deadlines are written. So that's a joint process. Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, a lot of the concerns that have been raised here by members on both sides go to public notice with regard to bills as they travel between committees or divisions of committees. I'm wondering if you could lay out for us maybe a twofold question for you. One is, how will the public know when a bill is going to be heard in a committee, and how long in advance will that necessarily, and I understand, Mr. Chair, some of that is due to writing the rules subject to the agreements, but if you could just lay out what you would understand in terms of public notice about when a bill is going to be heard in committee, and then I just have a short follow-up to that, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Albright, I'm sorry, I'm a little distracted by the noise in the around the table. So, Mr. Mark, did you get the question?
Mr. Chair, I did.
Please go ahead.
As far as deadlines, and this is reiterated in the January 23rd Representative Carlson memo in the second paragraph, but as far as notice, I'm sorry, it's noted there that this structure doesn't change any of the requirements for notice for public hearings and so on, and that the public notice of the committee meeting under Rule 6.20, public testimony, and so on, those requirements that are in the rules would all still apply. So I believe the rules make the point of I think it's at least 3 days, and I think it's qualified as practicable. So I would assume the 3 days or more notice is the to the extent it's practicable requirement, it applies to any division or committee on any bill, on any item.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marks, final question. With regard to the engrossment process as bills move between divisions, the reviser or representative of the reviser's office was in state government finance last week, and we were discussing this topic about identification of a bill that has been amended, and I understand that there may be some reversion back to using colored paper for the purposes of identifying a bill that has been amended, engrossed, if you will. So I'm wondering if you would understand the same, and so I'm clear then that a bill is engrossed once it comes back to Ways and Means, or is it engrossed as it leaves the committee?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, there would be basically, there'd be two steps there. There would be a division report, which is the compilation of the amendments by the committee, if the committee made amendments. If the committee doesn't make amendments, then the division report simply says the bill is moved on as it was. Following the division report, if there are amendments, there would be a new engrossment, and that engrossment would incorporate those amendments in and be called a division engrossment if it's being done within the divisions, as we're talking about here. It could be the first division engrossment. If it goes to two divisions, it would be the second division, and the second division made amendments, it would be the second division engrossment. But as the current policy is, engrossments only occur when amendments had been made. So a bill could be go to several committees or divisions if none of those committees made engrossments. If none of those committees made amendments, there would be no new engrossments made because the bill would still be in the state it was when it was introduced.
Mr. Chair, do you have a quick follow-up to that question. Thank you for your patience with me. Mr. Marks, then, in the past, a bill was not formally engrossed until it was heard on the House floor, received back from the committee after it was amended or not, and sent out. So now what we are going to rely upon is the engrossment provisions adopted by Ways and Means, but they would not be heard by the full body. They would only be heard by, in a sense, publicly by those at Ways and Means when it would come back from a division. That is a material change in terms of how the engrossment process would function for this biennium, correct?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Albright, it's not a material change from how it has worked in the past. If there have been subcommittees or divisions in the past, and as an example, the property tax division of the tax committee that has existed for many years, when they do a division report, that was turned into an engrossment when it was brought to the tax committee in the past. So there would be a committee engrossment at that point in time. So the engrossments are done, have typically been done when a bill moves from a subcommittee or a division to the next level up, the committee or the division or whatever it would have been. Those have been done before. They haven't always been posted before, but they have been done before.
Representative Howard, I have you next on the list, and you're passing. So we're going to move on to...
I was requested to be on the list.
And Representative Dowd, is this a question for... Because we have seven testifiers signed up. We've asked to limit testimony to 2 to 3 minutes, which is roughly 15 minutes, plus additional people may be here. And so as members ask questions, we're eating into member time at the end, and that's fine. I just want everybody to be aware of that. So Representative Dowd.
I don't know if there's anything after this, but this is a pretty important thing, so hopefully we can give it the time that it needs. But yes, my questions are for Mr. Marks. Number one, and I'm not sure, you're a fiscal analyst. Mr. McCormick should be sitting up there with you, and maybe some of these questions he could better answer, but I'll let him be your lifeline if you would like him to answer them. My first question is, how do amendments get dealt with, and when does a bill get engrossed? So a bill gets referred to a committee by Ways and Means, by Ways and Means. That division votes to put an amendment on, and then they send the bill back to Ways and Means. At what point does that bill get engrossed? Because it used to be that the bill would go to the floor between committees, and the amendment was officially added. The motion in committee was, we recommend that the bill be amended and re-referred to such and such committee. That was the old motion. And then the floor actually adopted the amendment and then referred it to the next committee. Now, is that process going to happen by the Ways and Means Committee? And would an engrossment happen after the Ways and Means Committee has... Are they going to be accepting the amendments from the division? And at what point would it trigger an engrossment? I'm worried about that because I want to make sure the public can see an engrossed version of the bill, and members can see an engrossed version of the bill, that they know what's the current version of this bill that we're working on right now. When does that get engrossed?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, as I understand the process, it's going to be when the division reports it out, there will be a division report issued, and then the division report, when it Ways and Means receives that, there will be a division engrossment, as it's going to be called, produced. So they're produced... basically, right after each other, the division report and then the division engrossment. And the division engrossment would then be available following the division action. The division engrossment would be available on the website.
Representative Dowd.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks. So the engrossment happens before the bill gets back to Ways and Means?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dowd, I believe it's part of the process as it goes back to Ways and Means. I don't know if I can say it. I don't know when it actually gets back to Ways and Means, but before it would go to another division or before Ways and Means would take action, and I think it would happen. I think it's happening almost right away when it gets back, yes.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks. It's my understanding by memo, as soon as that memo is issued, the bill just instantly leaves the committee and goes to Ways and Means. I know that somebody has to grab the bill from the CA of one committee and actually give it to the CA of the... We know how that process works. But it's my understanding that possession of the bill happens as soon as the memo is issued. Am I right about that or wrong?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, at the danger of getting really deep into things, the actual bills stay with the Ways and Means Committee, the greenbacks as such.
Okay.
The But the division has possession of the bill once the Ways and Means Chair issues the memo. The division has possession of it and can take action and so on.
Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Marks, so is the Ways and Means Committee gonna take action on the division report and actually adopt those amendments to the bill that will create another engrossed version of the bill?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, I don't know that the Ways and Means Committee is actually going to meet and take action on them. I think when they're sent back, the Ways and Means Committee has received it, essentially.
Representative Dowd.
It's my understanding, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks. It's my understanding that the last time this was done, that that's the way it was done, that the Ways and Means Committee was kind of taking action on those division reports before they moved it to the next committee. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I was told about, and I'd like to get your, correct me if I'm wrong, but I was told that at one point there was a bill that came from a division to Ways and Means, and the Ways and Means Committee dissected the division report and acted on each amendment. There was like eight amendments. Each amendment individually took some of them, didn't take others. Has that happened in this chamber when we used these rules for that short time when Democrats were in control in 7, 8, 9, and 10? Did that happen, or are you familiar with that? And correct me if I'm wrong.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Dowd, I am not familiar with it. I don't know if Mr. McCormick wants to comment or not.
Mr. McCormick is shaking his head no. We don't know what that means.
Madam Chair, members, I'm...
Mr. Chair.
I'm Mr. Chair, members, I'm not a good historian of the Ways and Means Committee. That's Bill Marx's and Lennon Carlson's home.
Mr. Chairman, I don't...
Representative Carlson.
I don't recall that. That's news to me.
Mr. Chairman, I am old and I can...
Representative Garofalo?
I actually still have some additional questions, Mr. Chairman.
We will return to you. Representative Garofalo, do you have a pressing need to interrupt your leader?
I just wanted to clarify that while we are both good-looking and smart, this is Representative Michael Howard. I'm Representative Patrick Garofalo. I sought recognition earlier, not Representative Howard. It's easy to confuse us, I understand. So I will... I'll wait. Thank you.
Chair's mistake benefits the committee. Representative...
So next, Mr. Marks, or Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks, is it possible for the Speaker to unilaterally take a bill from a committee and return it to the floor or anywhere else? Can the Speaker do that?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, I don't believe so.
But under, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks, but under these new rules, the Ways and Means Committee Chairman has the ability to unilaterally pull a bill from a division, whether they've acted on it, heard it, not anything, at any time, by memo, unilaterally pull a bill from committee. Is that, I just want to make sure I understand that.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, a bill that the chair had referred to the committee or division, not a bill that got there by direct referral from the floor.
Correct.
Representative Dowd.
So just as a follow-up, thank you, Mr. Chairman, on that one, that gives me some pause that now the Ways and Means Committee Chair, you know, we're giving the Ways and Means Committee Chair more power than the Speaker of this chamber has. The Speaker can't do that, but the Ways and Means Chair can do that. We all should think about that.
Representative Dowd, just to point out, we're actually giving the Ways and Means Chair the same power the Tax Chair has when there's a division. So Mr. Marks's previous testimony was that this is a standing practice whenever there's a division.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's just that we've made all of the committee's divisions now, so there's a slight departure. I know we're mincing words, but it's an actual thing. We've changed every committee now into a division. So my next question, if a bill, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks, if a bill gets referred to the Ways and Means Committee, it's my understanding that in the rules the deadlines, and I think that I just want a clarification. I think that when Representative Albright asked you this question, and I do apologize, Mr. Chairman, that we were chatting over here, but we're having trouble understanding how this works and where the pitfalls in this might be. Mr. Marks, is it those bills referred to Ways and Means have by definition automatically met deadline, and the deadlines don't affect those bills. Is that correct?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, as I tried to qualify before, that depends a little bit on how the deadline resolutions are written. If if it's within Ways and Means, presumably it may be exempt from the first or second deadline. The third deadline gets to be much more complicated if it's within a division of Ways and Means. And I think it's I think that's part of the discussion as far as the deadlines go, as to how those deadlines get written and how that affects the movement of bills.
Representative Dowd, can we
bring
the public testimony very
soon? One or two more. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the latitude. Mr. Marks, under that scenario, and I understand that barring a change in the way the resolutions have been written in the past, and I think that's what's holding up the resolution right now, setting our deadlines, is the Senate's rules would be clear on what would be affected by deadline, but under the House rules, it's not clear, and potentially any bill that has, according to the past practices of this chamber, any bill that has been referred to the Ways and Means Committee, if it doesn't get referred to another committee or bounce off the floor, that deadline doesn't apply to those bills. I have one final question at this time, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Marks. Can a bill then, barring some change in the resolution, which I'm sure is what's being negotiated right now, and hopefully the Senate is watching out for the public and transparency here, and they're going to put some meat in here that actually says, so the public knows that when a bill didn't meet deadline, it's done, and they can stop worrying about it cropping up. Can a bill get introduced after deadlines, get referred to Ways and Means, and the deadline would never apply to that bill? That bill can move just as if it was introduced on day one?
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dowd, if it stayed within Ways and Means, if it didn't get referred to a division, the current rules would allow that. If it goes to a division, I think that's subject to interpretation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Marks. I appreciate the questions, and God bless you, public.
So we are going to move on to public testimony, and there are a whole bunch of kids who've been waiting extremely patiently here today. I want to commend all of you for your patience with us. And I would like, according to our list, and this is an order of sign-up, the first is Amanda Kowalski. Okay. Elizabeth Bangert.
Mr. Chairman, do I not get to ask my question or not? That's why I sought recognition.
Representative Garofalo, Mr. Marks isn't going anywhere. People have been waiting. I want to make sure we have public testimony, and my mistake, and, you know,
I have to get back to work, Mr. Chairman, so I'll ask my question for Mr. Marks in private, though. So thanks.
Okay. Ms. Bangert.
Members of the committee, my name is Elizabeth Bangert, and I'm an average citizen. I'm wondering if anyone can tell me where I parked my car. There's a number of parking lots around here. Well, I just gave a memo to your aide, Mr. Mendoza, so why can't you tell me where I parked my car? That's how I feel with the current process. You can't tell me where I parked my car because I could get in it. I could tell you where I parked my car. I could get in it, and I could drive and move it before you got there. And it's incredibly frustrating to be silenced. People keep talking about transparency, and this goes for both sides of the aisle. These rules were used for 4 years previously under the Democratic rule, and a Republican installed a mute button also for 4 years, neither of which I agree with. And I'm sure people perhaps have their thoughts about that and maybe wish they wouldn't have supported their leader on that. I have no doubt. The point is that you may have a D or an R after your last name, but a D and an R are no letters found in We the People. And We the People demand transparency. I will be up here every day. I had to hire someone else to sit in my business because I can't know where a bill is. And House File 1 in 30, which moved from the Hide and Seek Committee, are moving behind the scenes. I need to be able to testify on those. It's a massive amount of government expansion with ripple effects that I fully understand. So if that's what I have to do, then that's fine. But I really encourage you to consider how you're voting on this because it does impact us. And if you feel like a few eye rolls that I've seen already from people whose kids are here, then buckle up because I'll bring more. And if any single one of you votes in agreement with these rules, I will find out what district you're from. I will start contacting people, and that will be on you and your next election. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we'll try to go through the testifiers to make sure we cover them all, and if members have questions for a particular testifier, we can bring them back. The next is Rob Doerr from the political director for Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. That's how we have him listed. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes. Rob Dorham, the political director for the Minnesota Gun Owners Caucus. Thank you, members, for allowing me to have the opportunity to have public testimony, as well as other people as well. You're probably familiar with me from work on Second Amendment-related issues here at the Capitol, but I bet passionate about a wide number of policy issues, and open government and transparency is certainly one of those of interest to me personally, as well as many of our members. Our members are really concerned about the restructuring of the committees, not necessarily the restructuring but itself, but some of the ways that the bills can proceed through the process that can make it difficult or if not impossible for citizens to stay up to date and informed on where a bill is and what its path forward is. We've been given verbal assurances that certain things would never be done. You know, it's far from the comfort that we would like to see with it actually in the text of the rules and having that accountability to make sure that citizens can still feel involved and connected to the process. A few of those examples, I've had a little bit of my thunder stolen, but a few of the specific examples that have been brought to our attention that we really don't have answers for. Could a bill move to, between committees without a floor action or without a committee action or without a vote? Could a bill be heard and tabled or laid over for inclusion and then move to another committee without members having to take a vote? Could bill be referred to a committee without sufficient time for amendments or testifiers to be lined up or something like that? Something like moved just, you know, a day before or less than a day before expected to be heard. We have members from all over the state. We had people from Roseau yesterday down here for our lobby day, and it's difficult for them to make those accommodations. And along those same lines, could a bill be pulled from committee moments before or hours before it's scheduled to be heard, where we've had people lined up and prepared to testify? Could that bill then be pulled and is no longer on the calendar because it's not in that committee's possession? So we fully understand there's times in the process where things need to be expedited. There's time constraints or things along those lines. But it should not have the ability to undermine the public's ability to take part in the legislative process or to make sure that they have the ability to see where their legislator stands or a committee member stands on a bill through their vote. So I've heard committee members complain about previous leadership's handling of this in different sessions and how there's, you know, sometimes some leadership does things some way. Yeah, that excuse doesn't work for me with my kids. I've got two kids, and when they say, well, you know, Bella did it, that doesn't work for my son to get him out of trouble. So I just encourage you guys that keep the process fair and open. And that I hope that the actual text of the rules and not political promises will actually address these issues so that the public can be at ease and that we all have the opportunity to enjoy open and transparent government, which Minnesota really has a rich history of. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dorr. I have Craig Stone.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record and certainly proceed.
Craig Stone, I'm here on my own behalf. Many of you know I was a 20-year House employee, and I always appreciated rules discussions, and I like the rules. So I'll get right into it. I understand all the rules, proposed rules, are in front of you, not just division structure. First, want to comment on Rule 3.33, the 24-hour rule. I believe it needs revision, Mr. Chair, or replacement. It was well-intentioned, and it does some very good things in public notification, member notification, that sort of thing. But it's my observation as a staffer who can now speak his mind because I'm no longer a staffer, that it tended to dull the House, and that's the kindest way I can put it. It used to be that the House is so scripted now, it's unfortunate. Members who are quick on their feet no longer have the advantage like they used to. So I'll just leave it there. You can accomplish this in other ways. I know that Representative Pawlowski's committee or his report that he did a number of years ago recommended going back to the general orders calendar. I also think that would be a great thing to do, but I understand that's not in your proposal. There's a number of ways you can adjust this rule to provide the public with the notification, but also allow for the spontaneity that the other body now has that the House no longer no longer has. Then I'd like to move to Rule 6.21, if I could. And the last paragraph of Rule 6.21, dealing with committee rules and amendments, and the allowing the chair of a committee to establish written procedures for amendments. I happen to completely agree with Representative Tina Liebling that a 24-hour rule in committee is not well thought out because it does not allow members of the public to show up, testify, and then the committee to react at that point in time. You can, again, deal with that through the rules if you'd like. But I would also mention that even if a committee does have a 24-hour rule, it doesn't affect amendments to amendments. If you look at the 90th session Ways and Means rules, you will notice that even in those rules, and I think Representative Carlson can testify to this, that the rules for the 90th session Ways and Means specifically said that the 24-hour rule does not apply to amendments, because I don't know how you can structure that. Unlike the House floor, we can actually put a structure in place in committees. It would be very difficult. A lot of discussion here about Rule 6.01. Thank you for allowing me to talk about that. That's the division structure that's proposed. I do want to mention that I have a lot of confidence in Representative Carlson, to be fair. I've known him for a number of years, so I have confidence in that. I also have great confidence in his committee administrator. The House is fortunate to have her, as are the taxpayers. But what I do want to say is be careful with this rule, because a rule that goes into place in the House may go on to the future indefinitely, like Rule 3.33, the 24-hour rule. I think it's harmed the House. There are other ways to do that, to get the information to the public and members without harming what I consider the structure of the House. So if the division structure goes into place for Ways and Means, unlike what it was in place for the Representative Carlson's Finance Committee, not Ways and Means, but the Finance Committee in those years we were discussing, it may go forward. And while I have confidence in Representative Carlson, I have seen members of the House who, if they had the power that would be given under these rules to the Ways and Means Chair, would use it for purposes that may not be in the public's best interest. Finally, I just want to mention, most of you know, but a lot of people are surprised by Mason's Section 616. A committee can only propose amendments to the bill referred, and it cannot actually amend or modify them. A committee cannot amend a bill. Neither can a division. So, and this has been discussed peripherally and also directly, but what the Ways and Means Committee will be the green jackets. Maybe it's a $10 million appropriation for buffers. It goes to Ways and Means. The chair, by memo, sends the discussion of that to one or two or three committees. It could be environment. It could be agriculture. That division considers it, suggests amendments. That committee engrossment then goes to Ways and Means, which then is basically a proposed amendment to the green jacket that still says $10 million for buffers. Now the chair either acts on that or doesn't, sends the discussion to another committee. In front of that other committee, other division, I'm sorry, in front of that other division, is it the proposed amendments by the earlier division, or is it just the... So thank you for your time. I think I've been past my 2 minutes. That works about 6 seconds per year that I served you folks. So good luck in your good luck in your considerations, and I have a frozen pipe at home that I have to go deal with. So.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Representative Dowd.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Stone. Very few people in this building have as much knowledge of this place as you do, and I appreciate you coming in to testify. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for giving him a little latitude. We appreciate your service to the state. You've been just an awesome public servant.
Thank you, Speaker Emeritus, and Mr. Chair, I apologize. I did want to say, I forgot to say, you know, this rule will go into the future. When we get to Mars, maybe this rule will still be in place. But I did want to, when I was looking back at my rules file, I've got the 1901 rules of the House committees. This was Rule 36 at the time. There was a committee on binding twine. Five members, binding twine. So I'm sure Representative Erdahl would be very interested in the committee on binding twine. So.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Melissa Schultz.
It's kind of scary.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Sure. My name is Melissa Schultz. I'm from District 38A in Lino Lakes. Although when you listen to me talk, you will definitely hear the long O that comes from the Iron Range. I wrote everything down so I stay on task. I'm just a citizen. So first, I want to thank Mr. Chairman and committee members for listening both today and when we kind of occupied your last meeting with a whole lot of children, which all came from a Facebook group of moms, is kind of how that all came about. So I'm here today to oppose the temporary rules and would like to request permanent rules that allow for better transparency and better opportunities for public comment. The rules as described on opening day of the session are truly troubling to me. They leave a lot of openings for backdoor politics that disregard and disrespect your constituents. You continue to make verbal promises of transparency, but you don't build in a backdoor if you're not going to use it, and that's what you've done. There have been verbal promises of transparency, that transparency will still exist, but those of us that reached out to members of this committee and our representatives received canned responses with very little clarifications in writing. I'm asking for rules that can guarantee that a person up in Chisholm or Bowabic that can't simply walk across the street like I can to testify in a hearing can call his or her representative and let them speak for him or her. By allowing bills to move through committee by internal memo without being referred back to the House floor for the discussions that are needed may remove the opportunity for that person in outstate to be heard by speaking through their representative because they're not in a committee. So if Doubt is my representative and he's not in that committee, how am I going to call him and be heard? Mr. Chairman, I've also thought a lot about what you said to us when we spoke a few weeks ago. You mentioned that it's hard to guarantee a lot of public notice at the end of session when things are moving fast and deadlines are nearing, and that's why there's not a lot of concrete timeframes in the rules. And this is very concerning to me. Just because of the end of session is approaching, citizens should still be able to have ample time to comment. Their concerns are still valid despite the need for speed that kind of comes at the end of a session. You aren't salesmen with a quota of bills that need to be filled by deadline. These bills are either right or wrong for the citizens of Minnesota. And how do you know what's helpful or hurtful if you play shell games that don't allow time for your constituents to inform you? And it shouldn't matter if similar rules were used in the past or what was done last year or what was said by who last year. We should be learning from the mistakes of our past, moving forward, growing, and doing better, striving for a more unified government, not a divided one. These are not the actions of the Democratic Party that resonated with me and I aligned with back when I took my first government class in high school. You have me aligning with these people. No offense. Some of you are Facebook friends, so don't unfriend me. But this is not the Democratic Party that I'm a part of. If I can't follow what's even going on in this meeting as an educated citizen of this state. So I ask of you to not approve the temporary rules as they are now. And come to a compromise that is a little more open and that we can understand. As you all know, it's negative 10 degrees outside and your nostrils freeze shut. Don't freeze our mouths shut, too. We need to be heard. And I apologize if I've misunderstood or mis- interpreted any of this, as this is the first time I've ever gotten involved in politics. And I'm still not trying to navigate this system. But thank you for hearing us today.
Thank you, Ms. Schultz. Elizabeth Church.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Elizabeth Pinska. Church was actually my maiden name. I'm from District 67A. I'm here today because I'm passionate about government and the rights and involvement of citizens. The rule change that we're discussing today greatly affects me as a citizen. First, it is extremely hard for me to follow, to track bills at home right now. There hasn't been the three-day notice that we were promised would happen, and the reason is it's not in the official rules. And to add on that, you know, I hear a lot today, this may happen, it could work like this, but there are so many, you know, different factors. There's nothing set in stone in the rules. Words and promises mean nothing if they aren't spelled out directly in a document that everyone has to follow. The second reason this affects me is that votes are no longer being taken in the committees. Our representatives are no longer have a say in what happens to bills, and that power has been moved to a few select people in the Ways and Means Committee. This is wrong. Representatives are here for us. They fight for us. And if my representative doesn't get to vote on a bill, then you've taken away his power and mine as a constituent. Government is not to be run this way. You can't say this isn't true because we have had 2 weeks of the temporary rules to prove that this hasn't been true. 40 bills moved yesterday by way of memo, and no vote was taken, which you said wouldn't happen. There needs to be a vote. There is no transparency with these rules. They have to be amended. Every detail about committees having to vote and a specific notice time for the public, like 3 days, has to be added specifically. You cannot expect us to take word if these will happen and trust good intentions if they aren't in the rules. The fact is that this rule change is so that things can move quickly and bills that we would maybe have an issue with can move around without notice and a vote or hearing. The slow process of voting, going to the House floor, giving ample notice to the public, this is also that bad bills don't become law. It is a protective measure. The fact that in the last 2 weeks under these temporary rules, well over 100 bills have been dropped, many not being voted on, it tells me that there are sneaky intentions. If I'm wrong, prove it with an amendment. I do not and will not support these new proposed rules without some change and transparency. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much. Alyssa Taylor.
Hi.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
I'm Alyssa Offling. I'm from 15A. It might have gotten missed thing on the internet.
I think it's based on your email address, so.
Yes. I wrote my name, my full name underneath.
Okay.
But I apologize. I also have to apologize in advance if I misunderstand anything also because I'm also new to this. I've never spoke before. So, okay. So how does these temp rules affect us? I feel these temp rules are not transparent to Minnesota citizens. Why? Transparency means clarity. If there's no clarity, there's no transparency, which leaves room for dishonesty in turn of lack of trust for elected government, an unintentional or intentional abuse of control or power. More transparency reduces corruption, which I don't see happening. How can we hold our government accountable with limited openness or where and when things are moving? If members find it challenging, almost impossible, how can we, the public? There's too many ways it affects the clarity and transparency for the public. If we can't track what's going on so fast without enough notice, leaves the public no adequate amount of time to plan to make the drive to speak on behalf of the rules, and speak on behalf of the bills that may be moving that they affect. Planning around work, families, childcare, and schooling, Minnesota citizens deserve adequate amount of time. The inability to track doesn't give all people the ability to speak. If someone can even follow it, that's not transparency to me. The less we, the people, as public, have knowledge of what's going on, our lives get tossed around and become a game, Expediting things so fast loses transparency. From what I understand, this also takes away from the other current members' abilities to vote, leaving too much power to just one person or to one committee to place where they want things to go instead of discussion. This seems like way too much power for one committee only. Doing so all by memo, leaving the public unable to give input and track, and no rules to stop this, from what I understand. We the public need time for our input more than just our big decisions. Big or small, it's our lives that it affects. This limited knowledge to the public feels like government taking power away from the people. What happens when you take power away from the people? More government control. Amendment 14, Section 1 states, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge, meaning lessen or diminish, the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. This inability and secrecy to be able to track these bills, we feel, hinders our privilege and liberty as American and Minnesota citizens to be able to be involved. We feel in the dark on what is and will be happening, where and when bills are moving and to be made. You cannot solely rely on someone's constituent to be able to ask the representative on what's going on. There's too much to track to know. If a representative can't, how can we? We need assurance of at least that 3 days' notice. There's too many of us that drive hours to come. I understand the responsibility to keep us safe and wanting something you feel is great to pass quickly. But how is it safe for citizens with more government control with no citizen input? How will you know just how great you feel things truly are without hearing constituents and citizens' input on how it will affect their lives? This to me tells me it's not beneficial for us, the public, but only for the person creating it and co-sponsoring it. I oppose these temporary bills. Thank you.
Thank you. Rick Heller was signed up to testify, but I believe he provided an amendment to the committee. My understanding is that you no longer wish to testify? You do? You don't? Okay. Is there anybody else from the public who wishes to come forward and testify? Rick, do you want to? Okay, go ahead, please. Identify yourself for the record and proceed. And we are over time. I recognize the public ended up waiting for a lot of member conversations, so we will continue the committee as long as public testimony is desired. So, Mr. Heller.
Thank you, Chair, and people on the Rules Committee. My name is Rick Heller, unofficial representative, twice exceptional, and be able to apply your Rule 622 on page 28 regarding my action and civic engagement at the legislature. The people I unofficially represent are closely based on socialsecurityadministration.gov under accessibility, dyslexia, learning disability, English as a second language. There's a plug in there called Browse Aloud that highlights and reads the words out loud. What that tells me is it's not that you can read anymore, it's a misused word. Can you understand oral English? Suggestion about your handouts. Post them timely online. And if not, put a link to them as it related to the committee specifically. This is also for people to easily to find it. Another suggestion is do an illustration of all the discussion about all the words that are in this book. We know that new members come here. The research has created a book for new members with some illustrations. It's not just words anymore, it's universal design, providing multiple means of representation through action and expression. The books read out loud, but with pictures and a flow chart, it may be a helpful tool for people to get it. Until you acquire the printed word effectively, you're gonna ask less questions. You're gonna be engaged independently. You won't have to ask in front of everybody. Because the thing you need to ask, everybody needs to ask themselves, have they reviewed this from front to back and do they understand it? It's understanding, browse aloud. suggestion on, because everyone can benefit from captioning. The Minnesota Commission on Deafblind made a statement in 2018 regarding that. Yet with your 2-minute limit, this can impact potential people talking speed, input, output. It also can affect the captioner that's currently typing this online. An example, students in the K-12 kindergarten through high school system, it's called the least restrictive environment with special ed. They're required to provide instructional materials in a timely manner for people that are print disabled, also known as reading disability and blind. This is a least restrictive environment for me, and I believe for the public at large. Timely is important, just like I expressed about having stuff up online, simple for ease and use for people to find that. You might want to also consider defining in data practice or what the word electronic means. I testified in the LASAR, first time they took public testimony last year in the LCCMR, the Lotto. They never took public testifiers before, and yet they're a commission. Just like you do, you ask for people to testify in Rule 622. As far as consider Senate File 4116. Tori West about that, it has to do with accessibility. It's a working group. It's only for the employees. It will not work. It needs to be a commission, and you guys have to have oversight on that. It's my suggestion. I was not involved in the bill writing, but Ms. Hartnett and Greg with the LCC sat down and wrote that. We already have a Lent working group here for accessibility in the Minnesota legislature. I ask you to consider that. Number four, the piece of, now I'm going to give you an example. I'm going to read this out loud. And I struck this, and it's for the public to know, it's PMM17-03. Okay, and I struck the word. If you hear the word Senate, just put the word House in its place.
Mr. Heller, 1 minute. Members, this document was passed around, and this is the document to which he's referring.
This is the amendment, and I appreciate anybody that would second it as an oral motion. You do have your attorneys here. I would believe it would fit in Article 2 somewhere. It's up to you if you choose to do that. Okay, so here we go. If you hear the word Senate, it's House, by the way. The Senate must comply with accessibility standards developed by the Chief Information Officer of the Office of Minute Services under Minnesota Statute Section 16E03, Subdivision 9, as the standards are amended from the time to time. The House or Senate Committee as Rules Administrator 1 may modify these standards to prevent undue burdens as defined in the Minnesota Statute Section 16E.015, Subdivision 4, and 2 must develop a process for granting exceptions of these standards. So there's an example for you. When you put a time limit on it, I don't know if the captioner got that. But the piece of this is when people have difficulty with the printed word and a process, it can do a disservice to everybody. So that's basically what I have to say today. And thank you again for this time to talk, because we are here to provide fairness and sameness for everybody, for equity and quality. And I appreciate your time for allowing me to talk on this.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Next testifier. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Frank Long, 47A.
I didn't have anything prepared. I just came in, listened to the questions and the testimony, some of the things I gleaned today that give me caution. Talking about verbal assurances instead of actual text in the rules. I know these are temporary. They're not permanent, but that gives me caution. Another thing, why such a radical change? What was wrong with the old process to the point to where you had to replace committees with subcommittees where things just don't seem to be trackable? I hear that the 3-day notice isn't honored. That's problematic. I mean, well, we had a testifier, and perhaps that's incorrect. I'm just going by what I've heard today as I've been here, but some of the things that give me caution and make me really worried about transparency coming through this committee. So I see these things as problems. The deadlines, basically, it's not clear to me. The deadlines are decided by the speaker and the majority leader. So is there a vote on that? I don't understand that process. And that's, you know, not being familiar enough. But these are just some of the things that that I've heard through here that give me pause and make me wonder, you know, if I'm going to be able to track things, if things are going to be put in writing, if it's going to just be verbal assurances that really are not set. So I'm more concerned than when I came here from what I've heard today. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Would you like to testify as well? Please come forward. We are over time, and we asked for a sign-up. We'll stay as long as we want to. No, please come ahead. I just want to remind members that we're over, and we are here to hear public testimony. So we will continue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. This is on the fly. I was not planning on doing this. My name is Sandy Hainer. I'm from 39B. So just a couple of quick things. A, it's super freezing in here. Just wanted to point that out. B, especially by the window. B, I observed that only one side of this room asked questions, and I don't know why that is, but I just thought it was interesting and wanted to kind of point that out. So a comment over here about how the old rules weren't really great either because the bills laid over for the omnibus would then come back and then these other bills were thrown in and nobody had really heard about them. And I don't disagree that that's bad, but I don't think that's a legitimate reason to then have other rules that are not great to replace not great rules. So let's just fix all of the not great rules instead of just passing new bad ones. So verbal promises don't really work in the real world, and I just bought a used car from a dealership, and lo and behold, you know, I just found some issues yesterday. So even though I called and said, well, you said it was fine, meh, too bad. So I don't really know how verbal promises should actually, like, work in here. It doesn't seem like it really holds any water in the real world, and I think this should classify as the real world. And so while whoever is making the verbal promises might have noble intentions, I think what I'm asking as a citizen is that you put rules in place for the people who don't have noble goals, right, to make it harder for them to do the things they shouldn't be doing to us. So make it in print, you know, and enough with the verbal promises, and make it clear. And the other thing is if you work for us, right, so you are representatives, that's the word that we use here. And so if you don't give us time or notification to know where things are going and how they're getting there and what they mean, then you haven't given us time to give you our input. And if we haven't given you input, then how do you know you're representing us? So that's my big question. And last week I spoke with my representative, and it's very limited time to meet with these people, right, and to say all the things that you want to say. And if I don't even have time to meet with my representative, if that's such a short window, I mean, I called last week to get a follow-up for next week, and I literally had half an hour out of her whole entire week that there's time for me. And I'm not throwing her under the bus. She's busy. But how is she going to represent me, you know what I mean, if bills are being shuffled around to different committees and I can't even get in to speak with her, period, if I can't make the committee meeting. So, I'm concerned that in this room, I'm not a party girl, I'm not going to pick a side, two birds, or two wings, same bird, if you ask me. But I'm concerned that there's this party situation rather than the people situation. And so I would like everyone just to keep that in mind. And I don't know who's on what side because none of you are my person, but again, the fact that one side of the room has questions and the other one's like, nope, we're good, is a little bit concerning to me. So that's what I have to say. Thank you for your time. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. So I don't see anybody else stepping forward. We have another one. Please come forward and testify.
Hello.
Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Caleb Stromquist from Roseau, Minnesota. It's actually my first time being here for something like this as well, but this is something very important. This has bearing on how we pass our laws that we have to live by. This is big. And to be able to be properly represented, that's actually a picture of what caused us to separate from England, for an example. Taxation without representation. Well, if our laws are being made without the proper amount of time and notice, or they can be passed through side doors instead of actually being voted on by the people that we've put into office. That is a real problem. And I had to speak on it because,
I'm a long ways away. If I hadn't had the time to know that this was going on, I wouldn't have been able to be here, and I want to exercise that right. So that's pretty much all I have.
Thank you for your testimony. Any further members of the public who would like to testify? Okay, we will close that portion. Representative Dowd had requested to be recognized on behalf of Representative Scott, who is welcome to come and sit at the committee table if she'd like. And members, there may be questions. We are past time. We will have further consideration of rules. You can sit up here
if you want.
Okay. We'll have further consideration of the rules in the future. We are not going to continue this hearing indefinitely. We're already past our noticed time period. So, Representative Scott, why don't you go ahead? I'll take time for maybe two members to speak up, and then we will adjourn. So, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Real briefly, every time the majority and the minority changes, we have this colossal movement in the state office building. And it's expensive to do that, and I think it's time that practice ends. And I was visiting with Mr. McCormick about what the best solutions for that are, and it's not necessarily a bill because the Senate would have to agree to it as well. But we're talking about either a resolution for the House floor or just coming to this committee and maybe opening that topic up for discussion and what can we do to remedy that situation. And I don't know if it's creating on the third floor, perhaps, a similar office that's on the fourth floor, and making adjustments on the third floor, the fifth floor, whatever it is. I just think that needs to be addressed, and we've got to stop this craziness of moving offices every 2 to 4 years because the majority and the minority changes a lot around here. So that's really what my concern was.
Thank you, Representative Scott. First, I want to have a sense of how many members wish to be heard before we adjourn. Representative Drazkowski, you were very brief, and you've had a lot of floor time so far. Representative Dowd. Okay, Representative Dowd on Representative Scott's.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the latitude, and Representative Scott. She brought that forward to our executive committee this last week, and it's a very valid point. We do spend a lot of money and a lot of time changing offices. I actually think it would be better for the way that we all interact if we mixed everybody up and it wasn't Democrats on these floors and Republicans on these floors, and that we actually, kind of mix things up and we had offices next to each other. I think it would help the way this place operates. So I think, she had originally mentioned, or Representative Scott, had originally mentioned that maybe an amendment to the rules. I think she just wanted to start to have this conversation. I actually had said one of the things, and I think bipartisan members on both sides of the aisle have in the past, Justice Thiessen had been a big proponent of actually going to two members per LA in the minority. We talked about it this year. I think that would help us shuffle everybody on the floors. It's a little bit of a limiting factor now because Republicans need three members next to each other because you have one staff for three members, and Democrats, it's one staff per two members. fixing that, I think, would help us just shuffle people on the floors. And then you just make it by seniority, and everybody ends up getting mixed up. And I think that probably would really help, not only that we don't have to move offices when the majority switches, but also it would help the culture of this place and us all get along with each other and talk to each other a little better. She's specifically mentioning fixing the corners so that we have two leadership offices that are the same. That's a potential solution, but even if you didn't do that because it might be somewhat expensive, we could just have the leadership corners switch, and the other members can stay where they are. So I think it's something that we should look at in the future. So thank you for the time, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Dowd. Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I was quite involved when we did the remodeling of the state office building in the mid-80s, and some of the suggestions that you're hearing about now, I made at the time. And
you've got a lot of wisdom, Mr.
One of which was not the mixing part of it, but I did advocate that the leadership corners be identical, so you just have to change the nameplate. Good idea, Representative Carlson. We'll think about that, one thing and another, and it but never happened. But it's not a bad idea, although I do have to say that the move forced me to clean out my files to some degree, so that was a good thing.
Well, yes, Representative Dowd, all I can say is we've had those same discussions, and, you know, we'll see. Representative Drazkowski, I think you're going to have the final word here.
Well, and maybe appropriate timing, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious about the timing of the meeting on Friday. We understood that there weren't going to be any committee meetings on Fridays. I know I live a ways away from St. Paul, and there's people who testified here today who very likely took time off of work to be here. I think kind of if we do have testimony, the evening time is probably a better time for them, for testifiers generally. But I would just request, Mr. Chair, in future meetings, if we can have them in the Monday through Thursday time period, I'd really prefer it.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Dowd.
Just a question for you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
It sounds like you're wrapping up member comments and we're going to close the meeting. So I just wanted to have you, I know there's a lot of people that took time off work or time out of their days to be here to testify. It sounds like the intention is to bring this up, and I appreciate the way that you're doing this because it gives everybody time to kind of think about it, but sounds like your intention is to bring this up at another meeting where we'll actually offer amendments and adopt some permanent rules of the House. Can you clarify if that is your intent, when you think the timeline of that might happen, both the committee here, so that these folks know kind of will it be in a week or in a month or that sort of thing, and then how quickly do you think these permanent rules would be to the House floor? So if you could just clarify that as we close the meeting.
Thank you, Representative Dowd, for kicking off my final remarks. Yes. Well, first of all, thank you for coming. And when we chatted after the committee hearing last time, I said that we would have at least a week's notice before the next hearing, and I believe we lived up to that promise. And certainly before the next committee hearing, there will be at least a week's notice, because I know there is unusual public interest in these rules, and so we will make sure that there is at least a week's notice. Historically, about a month after the session convenes is when we would adopt permanent rules, which would put us in the first half of February, and I don't see that we would deviate from that kind of timing. And so we would make sure to have at least one more rules committee hearing where permanent rules would be before the committee and amendments would be in order and further public testimony, and then we would go on to the floor from there. So with that, the meeting is adjourned.